With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Three games without a win for Manchester United as the 2020-21 season begins to come to its conclusion. Second place is confirmed. A European final awaits, but the true focus of this week is on the return of fans to Old Trafford after 436 days. The return of raw emotion, shared celebrations of real football. It was amazing to be back. Jack, it was amazing to be back, and the noise there just gives an example of the passion of the 10,000 fans back at Old Trafford, and that is the focus of this week. The result in the end was disappointing, and it's, I guess, fortunate there was nothing to play for, because walking away from Old Trafford on Tuesday evening, it took me about 5 minutes to forget that we'd drawn 1-1 with an already relegated team, because it was just amazing to be back there in that environment and that atmosphere. But also Edinson Cavani scored an outrageously brilliant goal, and so I think in the end we're second place, already confirmed. A 1-1 draw to Fulham will be very easily forgotten,
a result that will be very easily forgotten, but a day and especially a moment with Edinson Cavani that I think will be remembered for a long, long time. To be honest, the return of fans to Old Trafford. We were one of the few clubs in the country that didn't have any fans come back when we first were allowed some fans into Premier League games back in December before another round of lockdowns hit the UK. So, you know, we're one of the few clubs that haven't had any fans in since last March. And it was quite fitting, I think, that the last goal scored in front of fans was a long-range shot past an out of position goalkeeper from Scott McTominay against Manchester City, and Edinson Cavani provided a very similar and probably even more spectacular moment for United. I mean, it was just a stupendous goal, and I think you don't quite realise just how much you miss fans being in the stadium until you see it again. You know, I'd almost felt like I got used to watching football without any fans, and it's not until you, even just 10,000. And, you know, you still see so many empty seats, but just the emotion, the noise, it was the little things that I noticed. You know, it actually isn't really, to me, the celebrations when you score, because often you're celebrating yourself so much at home, so you don't quite notice it, the difference, so much. To me, the difference is more when you're on the counter-attack or when there's a contentious decision, when a big tackle goes in. You know, it's those kind of things that we take for granted so much that we don't have the same emotion to watching on our own. It was that I loved. You know, every time Fernandes picked up the ball and we were on the attack, you could feel Old Trafford rising to their hero. Yeah. And that is what I've missed.
Yeah,
so
it's that sense of anticipation and expectation for certain players as well. And I was listening to an interview with Dan James before Tuesday's game, and he was saying one of the things he mentioned while talking about fans returning was the roar that you get when he picks up the ball and charges forward. And I thought that was interesting because I think it would be different for all the players on the pitch. I guess for someone like Victor Lindelof, it would be the moment he makes a strong tackle, which he did at one point. And again, you get that uproar from the stands, anticipation and reaction. And it was funny really, because I was a little bit, I don't know the word. I think I was maybe a wary. I woke up on Tuesday morning and I wasn't really sure what to expect. And as you say, fans, football without fans had become very normalised. I think for us as fans and for players as well. But I think for us as fans, we'd kind of got used to it. And not only that, but 436 days is a long time to not do something, to have that pause in it. And so I was looking ahead to the game in the evening, thinking, will this be as good as I remember? Or will this kind of be a bit of a damp squib? Will it be kind of an underwhelming return? And the actual moment that will be brilliant will be when it's full. And yeah, that will be the actual moment where you think, wow, this is just a kind of another level. I was, I think, it exceeded my expectations massively. And I think you forget the 10,000 people in Old Trafford, it looks like the stadium's relatively empty, but 10,000 is a vast number of people given the circumstances of the last year and a half. 10,000 people inside a stadium with, I mean, staggered entry times.
All the games, to be honest. Like I was with you. I was wary of how much, you know, 4, 6, 8, 10,000 fans, would that actually make that much of a difference? Or would it almost look even more sad, you know, that you've just got so many empty seats everywhere with just a smattering of fans? But the difference it makes to the atmosphere and the occasion and the emotion you have watching the game was huge.
It is. It's enormous. And I think what was interesting is I had that wariness partly because so much of the football is the experience and the shared experience and the talking to mates, but also talking to strangers. And that is obviously stripped back a bit. There isn't quite, I mean, you could go to the pub before, but it's not quite the same. It's kind of sitting at tables and getting table service and ordering on an app rather than standing in a hub and a crowd of people. And so I guess a bit of the wariness came from that, but actually it was quite nice to have this stripped back experience where you didn't think about going into the concourse at halftime to grab another pint. It was very stripped back, and it kind of allowed that raw emotion to come out. Obviously I looked around and the stadium wasn't full, but the songs carried really well. They started very regularly. The sound that came out was pretty decent. And it was that stripping back of kind of all the side stuff that you normally get with football into just kind of the game. And it was really nice. It was great to be there. And I turned to my brother at one point and thought, this is brilliant. And it was a reminder as well of kind of the reason that you love going to the football is because it kind of facilitates days. It facilitates other memories. The going to the pub before and then going to the pub or grabbing a meal after or kind of chatting to strangers there. Is that which makes it so good? Not necessarily the football on the pitch, but we should talk about the football on the pitch a little bit. And Edinson Cavani's goal was, yeah, as you say, similar to McTominay's, and just it was. I think as you also said, absolutely right that Edinson Cavani was the one to give that memorable moment to the first match in a while, given his recent form and his impact this season.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better goal and a better person to be the one to raise the curtain on Old Trafford with fans again. It was everything that we could have asked for. He deserved it, you know, no end. Everything he's done for us, especially in the last 2 months or so with his performances, it was so fitting that he was the one that would score the goal on the return of fans, especially since so much of the conversation around whether he was going to stay or not in the last, you know, 6 weeks or so has focused around this desire, especially from Solskjaer, for Cavani to feel that feeling of scoring in front of fans at Old Trafford, and that it wouldn't feel right if he didn't get that moment. And we've now had a small taste of it. He's had a small taste of it. And we can only hope that that is the first of many in front of some fans at Old Trafford, but hopefully soon a full Old Trafford next season, when he will hopefully be a big part of our team going forward and scoring even more goals at that. It was, I mean, just watching the goal, it felt like it happened in slow motion.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you see a player try something and it feels like it takes an age for it to actually happen and for the end result to come to fruition. And that was one of these goals. It felt like the ball hung in the air for decades.
Yeah.
At one point, it's just like, is it going to make it? And I mean, when it did, it's just the audacity to even try it. You know, like, he had 30 yards of open space in front of him. Why would you not just run into it and calmly slot the ball past Areola?
I know.
The best players don't think like that.
It just is instinct, isn't it? It's
what,
the
what
result
was that moment
of playing
like in the stadium, Harry?
It's funny. So I was sat behind it. So from the end where De Gea threw the ball. So I watched it. I watched Cavani. I saw the number 7 on Cavani's back and watched it go in at the Stretford end, to give you an idea of where I was sat. It's hard to describe, isn't it? I don't just want to say it was great. It was, but it was that kind of release of, I think, because we were playing all right as well. Everyone was in a good mood anyway. And he did have that brilliant thing where it came to him and you get that sharp intake of breath and then the pause. And that's one of my favorite things about full stadiums, is that intake of breath and in that kind of moment of silence. As you say, the ball just kind of hung in the air for an age, and you get that kind of deep silence that has no right to be that quiet at such an exciting moment. And then the snap into just chaos and noise. And then it's noise for half an hour afterwards. But that one moment of silence is
it's
so satisfying.
It's the same
satisfying
silence you get when someone's about to take a penalty as well. It's all noise, noise, noise while they're setting everything up and putting the ball down and going back. But as soon as their run-up starts, it's silence in the stadium. Yeah. It's like hushed. You literally feel kind of a hush fall over the stadium. And you said, in the best of scenarios, the one that always comes to mind is Rashford's penalty against PSG. You know, you hear it ripple the net and then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the realisation of... Because it always takes people kind of, I don't know how long, half a second to realise kind of what's happened and to process. And then for their brain to go from processing it and processing their disbelief to get that noise out of their mouths. But just that noise is, I'm actually like you. I don't think the celebration of the goal is the best bit about fans being back, but that noise is just brilliant to hear. And I tell you what it is as well, is the pumped in fan noise. You get the celebration and it sounds pretty similar, but what you don't get is that bit before the sharp intake of breath where the ball, it looks like Bruno's flicked it on, whether he's touched it or not. I don't know. I haven't watched it back enough. I have watched that goal back many, many times already today, but you get that before the intake of breath is that kind of noise of anticipation, and then it goes. And that actual raw, pure, genuine, authentic noise rather than the pumped in, kind of EA Sports fan noise was brilliant. In terms of the performance, it was a shame that we didn't win. Particularly because in the second half, we really dominated them. And my brother did turn to me about 10 minutes before they scored and said that they are going to score here, aren't they? Because we didn't have, I don't think we had kind of clear cut chance after clear cut chance, but we did have Mason Greenwood should have scored. There were a couple more that came close. Greenwood probably had two or three, which he would have expected him to score, one in particular, which Areola saved. But we did have them under the cosh, and it would have been brilliant to win that by a few goals. And we should have won that probably 3-0 or 4-0 rather than drawing it 1-1. And I guess it's because we had nothing to play for, that little extra killer instinct maybe wasn't quite there. But I don't think it's a trend. I think it's a dip in form, certainly. But I think that does come down to both an intense schedule and the fact that we kind of know where we're finishing this season already.
I mean, it very much felt like an end of season game. It felt like a bit of a party atmosphere in the second half, in that it felt like we were taking it a little bit easy. We were very clearly dominant in the game. There was, you know, a bit of a party atmosphere in the stand, obviously, with fans being back in, everyone enjoying a great day out. And yeah, just there, normally when you're 1-0 up against the team, even if you are dominating, there is some amount of tension in the stadium. And there was nothing at all in any way of tension in Old Trafford, at least what it felt like watching the game.
Yeah, I don't think there was.
And that's exactly what I mean about it being an end of season atmosphere in almost every way. And just felt like the urgency kind of fell out of United's play. We were playing some really nice football. It was almost a bit, not showing off, but it felt a bit like missed chances were, you know, it was there. It's not a big deal. There was nothing to play for. And you could just sort of feel our intensity dropping in the game. I think, you know, this week has obviously been very disappointing, in 3 games without a win. I can't remember the last time we went 3 games without a win, to be honest. A long, long time without 3 games without a win. So that is obviously disappointing and a bit of a worry going into the cup final. I don't think in terms of actually the form. You know, to me, the only one of those games that actually was a little bit worrying was Liverpool. You know, I don't think we played very well against Liverpool with a full strength side, but Leicester with 10 changes and Fulham with, again, a very end of season feel, I'm not too concerned. And I don't think it changes too much going into the Europa League final, other than, you know, just for confidence and even sort of subconscious morale in the team, it's nice to go into those kind of games off the back of a win.
Yeah, I think it definitely is a confidence booster to go into a final with that confidence, having scored a few goals and picked up a couple of victories at the end of the season does help. On the other hand, it's a one-off game, and I think it might help for the first 2 or 3 minutes of the game, but I'm not sure it really affects it beyond that, what you've done in the previous weeks. I think once it starts to, the ball starts to move from end to end, I think players just kind of get stuck into their game and very focused on the final at hand rather than what's happened before. So it maybe affects the preparation slightly, but I think it's, in terms of its effect on the final, I'm not sure it has a great deal, even if we as fans maybe feel less confident going into it. But it is a shame not to go into the final having won all of our last games. And it's also a shame, I think, we will finish this season quite far behind City when we could have finished kind of as close as 4 or 5 points, or and that would have been, whereas now 12 points behind, we'll probably finish 12 points behind, perhaps more. I expect City will win on the final day of the season, and we're going to preview the Wolves game in a bit. Do you think, how much do you think Maguire's absence has affected us? Because it has, our defence is certainly a concern without him.
Oh, massive. It's been massive. I think you can see that in that Solskjaer, I still don't think, has quite settled on the lineup of that centre-back pairing and who will partner Lindelof. I think it's still a really close battle between Twanzabia and Bailly, and I don't think that has been figured out quite completely yet. I think it's a massive loss not having Maguire. You know, you say you only appreciate something when it's gone, and I think that is the case with him at the moment. I don't think we quite maybe understood just how important he is to the stability for us at the back. I mean, we look far, far weaker without him in there. Even against Fulham in the first half and before the goal in the second half, when we were dominating, you know, we felt vulnerable at the back. And I'm not saying that we've always been brilliant under Maguire, but it definitely felt like a marked absence. And Solskjaer said it's not looking very good for the Europa League final. Which, I mean, just personally for Maguire is awful, because if anyone deserves to play in that game, it's him, having played every single minute up until 2 weeks ago for the almost 2 years. But for the team as a whole, I think it is a real worry going into a final that we're not going to have him in the back four.
Yeah, I think it is. We'll be previewing the Europa League final in full in the next couple of days, probably before the Wolves game. We're going to go to preview the Wolves game in a second. I think what's worrying is we've got the choice between two defenders to play with Lindelof, and it's quite hard to choose at the moment, not because they've both taken their chance and played well, but because they both have done the opposite and looked shaky. And I guess I think both of them alongside were it Lindelof that was ruled out, they both look a lot better next to Maguire, and that there's no doubt about that. But it's certainly a concern. It really affects the team as well. Highlights,
again, the need for a centre-back this summer, even if it's not someone to partner Maguire, but the centre-back depth, you know, if whether it's Maguire or Lindelof, if their partnership are just about feasible for a top team, as soon as we get one injury, it's most definitely not okay for a top team to have, you know, Tanzebi or Bailly starting on a weekly basis based on what we've seen.
Yeah, and I can't see Maguire being back for the final. Really, I mean, he was walking around on crutches yesterday. Just to wrap up, it was nice that Solskjaer gave a little speech at the end, saying we know we haven't finished where we want to in the league, which I thought was a good reminder that second is not the aim, but the consolation, and not much more than that, even if it does represent a certain amount of progress. We're going to go to preview Wolves in a second, but first, very quickly on the youth and women's teams. The under-23s and the under-18s have both finished their seasons, but their player of the years are going to be announced this week. I expect the two awards will go to Hannibal Medjbri and Shola Shoretire, both attacking midfielders, both consistently excellent at whatever age group they've played at. Hannibal was sent off in his last game of the season, which wasn't entirely surprising. He gets terrible protection from referees, and he does need to concentrate on keeping that in, and that's been a problem since he joined, actually, over the last 2 years, and it's something the coaches are working on. But you can see why he gets angry when he gets hacked down multiple times a game. Nicknamed the Premier League 2's Jack Grealish, which is reasonably accurate. But he could take some lessons off Grealish in how not to get annoyed at it. In terms of other contenders for the awards, I think they'll go to Hannibal and Shoretire, but I expect Ethan Galbraith could be in contention. Alvaro Fernandez, Joe Hugo and Charlie McNeil too all have good shouts to be given the gongs. The women's team, Casey Stoney has left Manchester United, as I'm sure you've seen by now, which is a real shame. She did a fantastic job from the outset of United's women team, and it raises questions as to how much United want their women's team to be successful for the right reasons, or whether it's just about keeping up images. Casey Stoney was always quite open about having to demand more and ask for more, and often not getting it. Some false promises from the United board, and managers in women's football shouldn't have to include constant demands for more in their job descriptions. So that's a shame, and we'll see who United get in to replace her. Jack, Wolves, what do you think the Fulham 11 says about the Europa League starting lineup? Because I thought it was interesting that Twanzebe started, as we were just talking about, Bailly and Twanzebe are the two options. I guess that means Bailly starts Wolves, and the only thing I thought is maybe Bailly starts Wolves and then the Europa League final as well, because Solskjaer thinks he wants to have like him in the rhythm rather than having a week's rest. Because actually, if you're going into a final, fitness is important, of course, but kind of being in your rhythm is also pretty important.
I think the Fulham 11 to me is, I think there's two positions up for grabs. I think everything else pretty much picks itself. So I think it will be the Fulham 11 in the final. And then I think with Bailly, he'll probably get the nod against Wolves. And I think it's probably going to be a case of play well and you're in, play badly and you're out. To be honest, I think it is that close between Twanzebe and Bailly at the moment. And again, like you said, not in the sense of, gee, they're both playing amazingly, which one do I go with? But more in the which one feels like the less bad option. And I think it will be kind of down to that. I think with Bailly, he has probably a higher ceiling than Twanzebe. We've seen some of the performances that he's put in before be immaculate, but he also has the potential to make a clanger as well. So I think it would probably be a case of Bailly if play well and you start. I mean, it could even be the case that both of them start, depending on how many players we end up resting against Wolves, and maybe Solskjaer thinks playing them together and see who plays better at the two of them.
Yeah.
So I think that's the one position up for grabs. And the other, I think, is who plays on the right. I expect Rashford to come back in over Greenwood, and we stick with Pogba on the left, Fernandes through the middle, Rashford on the right, and then Cavani up top. I think there is an outside chance that Greenwood could play over Rashford. I actually think Greenwood is better suited to playing on the right than Rashford.
Yeah,
like, I think he's also Greenwood in better form. Gets closer to his highest level than Rashford does playing on the right. But I think I just don't think you can go into a final without Marcus Rashford in our team.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. I think he has a starting spot. And I think Mason's probably done enough to take that starting spot off him. The only thing is, and I think Mason Greenwood's probably been our best player this month, apart from maybe Cavani. But I think part of the reason Cavani's been good is because Greenwood's been good as well. And I think he should start. The only thing is, Rashford's not a great sub, whereas Greenwood is a fantastic sub. And so that might come into it, that you start Rashford and if he's not performing. I think Rashford's best performances always come when he starts a game, whereas Greenwood's best performances are probably off the bench because he tends to fade in games. Beyond the 60-minute mark, he often fades out of them. Whereas if you bring him off the bench for that and he has just half an hour to impress and to make a difference, then I think he is very good at that. So I think that'll probably come into mind. I'm not sure what we're kind of already previewing Europa League. Let's go back to Wolves and then we can talk more about this in a second episode later this week. Wolves finishing bottom half of the table this year now. They should really be doing better, shouldn't they?
Yeah, it's been, I think, a bit of a strange season for them. And I think, to be honest, this is probably where everyone expected them to be. If you'd have said when they got promoted, where would Wolves be in 3 years? This is probably where everyone expected. But given what they've achieved in the last couple of years, yeah, I think we all thought they'd be much higher up. We've said before that they're probably the team that we hate watching United play the most, simply because it's 90 minutes of almost complete boredom. And I think that has been pretty much borne out for a lot of the season, in that they just don't score enough goals. They don't have the threat up front. Fabio Silva and William Jose definitely don't offer the kind of threat that you would expect of a top half Premier League team. So, I mean, as it was against Fulham, it's there for the taking against us. It's there for the taking for us, sorry, just as it was against Fulham. It's whether we can... I think it comes down partly to the intensity again. You know, the intensity definitely dropped off towards the end of the Fulham game. And I think if we are able to put ourselves in a position where we're one goal up, will we sort of have the intensity to be ruthless and kill the game off?
Yeah, that is something we've had to work on all season and still need to do so. A win against Wolves would be a nice way, but it'll be a much rotated team, won't it? And I expect De Gea will start the Europa League final. So I'm not going to say it might be De Gea's last appearance for United, but the one at Fulham could have been his last appearance at Old Trafford if he's going to be moved on this summer, which at the moment I can't really see happening. But that's a side point that we can talk about in a couple of weeks. We're going to wrap things up there. I'm not going to give a prediction for the Wolves game because I've got no ideal start. I reckon we'll probably lose it, to be honest. Which will be a lovely way to end the season. But there we go. Second place secured. And that's what matters for now. And what really matters is Europa League final. We're going to go to a Patreon Q&A now. We've got a couple of questions from Steve and Michael. Everyone else, we will speak to you very soon to preview the Europa League final. And in terms of our episodes coming up, it'll be preview of the Europa League final. And then we'll review it. We won't speak to you straight after the Wolves game because it doesn't really matter. And then we'll have a season review for you in a couple of weeks, looking back at the entire season, which incredibly started with United losing 3 out of our first 6 games. It doesn't feel like that now, although in the last couple of weeks, it does feel like that a little bit. Jack, where can people find more from you on Twitter for the Wolves game and for the Europa League final?
At UTDTate, T-A-I-T.
You can find me at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.